to John Swinfield's Big Business Podcast. And now, let me introduce your host, journalist and writer, John Swinfield.
Hello, I'm John Swinfield. Welcome to Big Business. I'm a journalist and television producer, and I've spent much of my life writing and making films about business bosses. I hope you find this pod gossipy, irreverent, informative, and even fun. If you like the feed, please don't forget to click the subscriber button. Big Business is on every week at 11 a.m. GMT on Wednesdays. Lord Forte was a small man of immense stature. At one time, he was the world's biggest caterer and hotelier. In his immaculate suits, it was just as if he'd stepped out of a tailor's window. When he crossed his legs, you saw the unmarked soles of his shoes, as if he wore them only once, or only ever on carpet. I made a half-hour documentary about him for ITV. He had an impish humour and boundless charm. His office was on the first floor of his immaculate Grosvenor House Hotel in London's Park Lane, one of the most valuable chunks of real estate in the world. He was standing at a window, hands behind his back, gazing across the Park Lane traffic, Hyde Park beyond. He turned and said to me, "When I think back, it seems such a long time ago. Selling ice creams. Who'd have thought?" A quizzical, winning smile. That's how he began, running a tiny milk bar in London's Regent Street. Through a string of acquisitions, he'd spent his life building a global empire, only to see it snatched away in his twilight years by Sir Jerry Robinson of Granada in one of the city's bloodiest takeover battles. Charles Forte's fiefdom wasn't all five-star hotels. There was an abundance of lesser hostelries and outlets. It was best known for its little chef eateries and motorway cafes, which Egon Rone, the Hungarian-born food expert, had lambasted. Charles described Rone to me as this: "Food expert? So called. Who says so?" That might be how he describes himself. An expert. What makes him an expert? What's he ever done? Charles was twiddling his carefully trimmed moustache, pacing up and down, eyes twinkling like bright little stars. A fighter. If anybody dared criticise his food, or his staff, his business or his family, he was terrier-like. Small, tenacious, snapping at their heels. I took him to film at one of his motorway pull-ins and told him not to warn its manager that we were coming. It was to be a surprise visit. Some hope. My idea was that he'd be able to see for himself if Rone's criticisms were valid. Charles insisted we arrive in his Rolls-Royce, which immediately, of course, gave the game away. It was obvious from the moment we arrived that Charles had entirely ignored my imprecations about secrecy. He'd seen a public relations opportunity, and he'd lunged at it with both hands. I was miffed, but with hindsight in his position, I might well have done the same. Because everybody knew we were coming, it took some of the zing out of the sequence. He'd let the cat out of the bag, so it was no surprise to find that we'd landed in the best motorway caff imaginable. Attentive service, exquisite food, everything absolutely spotless. "I didn't tell anybody we were coming," Forte laughed. "Oh, really? What twaddle. There was everything but a red carpet in the lavatory." "Well," I said, "if they really didn't know we were coming, this place is truly amazing. I've never been in a motorway caff like this. Why, even the tea's drinkable. It's not in the least bit stewed." "Stewed," Charles said. "My tea is never stewed." "Well, I'm sorry, but I'm afraid it can be. I think I spend more time in motorway cafes than you, Charles, going up and down Britain. and I can tell you that in these places your tea's often stewed. Well, I've never had it, he said. Well, that's probably because you're the boss. No, 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 not at all, he smiled, oozing charm. There's one sure way to spot a really smart capitalist. When they're in a corner, they're always seductive and silken. It doesn't always apply. Some will fly into a rage. But a classy operator, somebody who knows their way around, like Charles Forte, could always deploy a more persuasive arsenal than bombast and temper. We settled ourselves down at a table, making ourselves comfortable. Charles was at his most plausible. John, I don't think you quite understand my business. Some bosses and politicians who don't know you from Adam, or on a first meeting, will call you by your Christian name, trying to suggest to an audience that you're both members of some friendly, clubby little world. There's also, of course, a vague idea that you, the interviewer, will in some way take a softer line, a more chatty, friendly approach. It's all part of some silly PR nonsense that I'm sure most viewers and listeners can see through. Charles and I had known each other for some time, so Christian names were valid. This company, John, he told me, is my creation. It's my family. That's how I see it. It's how my people see me. We're one big, happy family. We're all in it together. Everybody knows me. We all know each other. We don't need to put on airs and graces. We're all friends here. I thought it total balderdash, but he said it with such conviction, an all-embracing warmth, that for a moment you could be taken in. When Charles Forte was on form, he was one of the most disarming and plausible businessmen I've ever met, and over the years, I've met a few. Charles, I told him, you've got well over 100,000 workers in 50 countries. Now that's a very big family. You can't possibly know them all. But he wouldn't entertain such thoughts. He was a super salesman, and the most effective salesman must believe in their product. And there was nobody who believed in their product more than Charles. He brought energy, passion, and a total commitment to a company that he'd built from nothing. I found many employees, they wouldn't say it on camera, and I couldn't really blame them, who felt it was just another big company, no better and no worse, with all the standard strengths and the failings of any other large combine. Any notions that working for it was to be part of one big happy family were entirely fanciful. Charles was born in Italy and had emigrated to Scotland at the age of 4. His father, with 2 cousins, ran a cafe in Weston-super-Mare, so from early on, catering was very much in his blood. At the start of the Second World War, because of his Italian parentage, he was interned for 3 months on the Isle of Man. For somebody as patriotic, as fiercely pro-British, it must have been a shocking experience. From his milk bar, Forte built Trust House Forte into a global operation with a finger in every corner of hospitality. From airport catering to breweries and wine merchants, from publishing, Sidgwick and Jackson, to restaurants and motorway service centres. His hotels range from chain and budget, travel lodges and post houses strung across the UK, to luxury emporiums such as London's Grosvenor, Brown's, the Waldorf, and several more. He bred a hotel dynasty. His son Rocco built his own portfolio of exclusive hotels after Robinson's Granada had swooped. Charles Forte's daughter, Olga Polizzi, designed Rocco's hotels and has her own hotel in the West Country. His granddaughter, Alex, presents TV shows about hotels. In hospitality, a reputation for offering value for money, which is part of the Forte DNA, can draw both praise and, to a degree, opprobrium. I've looked into a lot of businesses and industries, and in the snobbery stakes, hotels and restaurants can feature strongly. Some owners seem to think they're more important than the guests, doing them a favour by even letting them stay. For years, Forte tried to buy London's top-end Savoy Hotel to add to his conquests. He failed, in part because it was protected by a controversial and curious share structure. But there was also snobbery, tittle-tattle about jumped-up caterers buying exclusive hotels. It was all rubbish. The Savoy and its people thought, at the time, an awful lot of themselves. The hotel business is treacherous. Hostelries come and go. Everybody seems to think running one is a doddle. Anybody can do it. Change the beds, clean the bathrooms, do a little cooking. What's difficult? Well, in truth, everything. But get it right, and you can make a fortune. Charles told me, there's nothing quite like a hotel room, you know, for generating income. Once you've got the room, it keeps on making money, night after night, week in, week out. Of course, you have to fill the hotel. Occupancy levels are crucial, and the hotel must be attractive, and it's got to be in the right location. But from then on, you keep the rooms clean and nice, you look after them, and if you get it right, it can make a lot of money. If you get it wrong, it can be terrible. You're saddled with a failing hotel, which is costing you money, and you can't get rid of it. Forte went from strength to strength, with a string of acquisitions and takeovers. Hospitality is pivotal to the service economy, on which the UK now heavily depends. But it's also highly sensitive to the vicissitudes of the wider economy. If travel ceases, as with COVID-19, hotels and restaurants lie empty, forlorn and costly. Charles had invited me to have lunch at his home in London with his wife, Lady Forte, and their children. When I asked him to remind me of his London address, he said, "Oh, just ask any taxi driver for Charles Forte's home. They'll bring you straight here." I thought I'd put it to the test and did exactly that, picking up a taxi at Liverpool Street and only asking for Lord Forte's home. Sure enough, the cabbie didn't hesitate and took me to the door. When I asked him how he knew, he said, "Well, it's Charlie Forte's place. They don't make 'em like him no more. Everybody knows Charlie's place." "What did I tell you?" Charles smiled, opening the grand front door, raising his hand in thanks to the cabbie as he drove away. The drawing room was a chandelier treasure trove of paintings and antiques. The whole place was like a stately home in the middle of London. "Join me in a glass," he said, pouring flutes of Krug. At lunch, with his wife and Olga, Charles insisted I try his homemade ice cream with its tang of cinnamon. "In the early days, I made a lot of ice cream," he laughed. Some while later, Jerry Robinson and Granada pounced and took over the Forte Empire. Charles was devastated. "I'm very, very disappointed," he told me. "You work hard all your life to build something, and then you see it taken away in one fell swoop." For a moment, he broke off and turned away. I was not sure how distressed he was, and I liked him far too much to press. But he swiftly composed himself, as was his way. "I'm recovering," he told me, "from the shock of seeing something I created, built and loved, well, it's just disappeared. It was always far more to me than just a business. It was a lifetime's work. I'm sorry it went. It has affected me very badly. I was very depressed for a while. I'm now beginning to get over the shock." I had never seen Charles Forte like this, and I got to know him reasonably well. It saddened me. "I can do nothing. That's it," he told me. He clasped his hands together, a gesture of futility. I did not have control of the company. I had, I think, 46%. It's a large share, but I didn't have control, and that's the mistake I made. They took advantage of that. I'm not blaming the people themselves. They wanted to buy a company, so they bought my company. Well, I hope they run it well. Forte's known around the world. I'm known everywhere. The company's known everywhere. I started with £500, and the company grew to £1.8 billion. Reporters should always aspire to being impartial and dispassionate, but I felt it hard not to grieve for him. He was a distinguished old warrior, who at one time seemed to own half London. His pride was now wounded, his dignity had been impaired. I sensed that he felt trapped. Was that how he felt? He stared at the carpet. There was a long pause. His voice was uncharacteristically faint. "Well, yes, I do. We've suffered, but we'll get through this. I have a very loving family, a loving wife." It was the city which finally brought down Forte. Charles, when I mentioned this, was suddenly fiery and animated. There was a glimmer of his old self, but he was as near to being bitter as I'd ever seen him. The institutions, he told me, had too many shares. They wanted the money. It was as simple as that. They just wanted the money. For all the articles and TV programs by people like me about great businesses being brought down and assets stripped and the heartache of their founders, the stark truth is that big takeovers are decided in the square mile by the institutions. The institutions have the ultimate power. Their decisions are devoid of sentiment and are, as Charles said, primarily all about the money. This, then, is capitalism, at its best and at its worst. I asked Jerry Robinson, the Granada boss, somebody else who I knew quite well, if he cared about the trauma that comes in the wake of a takeover. "Well, there are times," Jerry told me, "when you disrupt people's lives by cutting down, selling off, making people redundant. Those things require a certain toughness of spirit. These things are not the nicest part of you. If you're dealing with somebody who is not doing what needs to be done, and you have to talk to them about leaving, those are not easy things to handle." I don't know Charles Forte. I've certainly admired him in business. He aggressively grew his company by going out and buying things. But if it's you on the receiving end, well, it isn't so nice. I have a lot of sympathy with his feelings. It must have been horrible. Jerry Robinson's critics claim that in seizing Forte, he was an opportunist and an asset stripper. He pounced and caught it off guard. But isn't that simply called business? Seeing a chance and going for it? His lieutenants had tracked Forte for months, snooping on its hotels and restaurants, picking up on the gossip, hearing the rumours, distilling fact from fiction, doing their sums, listening, learning, garnering support in the city. Devoid of all emotion, wasn't the Forte takeover, bloody though it was, just really another case of dog eats dog? I think it broke Charles's heart, but he perhaps takes solace in knowing that Rocco and the rest of the Forte dynasty are carrying on the remarkable tradition that he began, building a company which eventually straddled the globe from a modest little milk bar in London's Regent Street. You've been listening to Big Business. This is John Swinfield signing off. Don't forget to click on subscribe. I'm on every Wednesday at 11 a.m. GMT.